If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret, searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Wanted to let you know that the Sound Stream is now available exclusively on the Sound app. You can now listen 24/7 to a music stream featuring jam bands and more, much more. So not just what you'd expect, but a few surprises along the way too. Curated by the Sound Media team, the stream offers up your favorite songs by your favorite bands and artists, both live and in the studio. We'll also be adding specialty programming and much more. So get it today and listen wherever you want for free. Get the app for iOS and Android by searching for The Sound Podcast and Stream or at app.thesoundmedia.com. Just hit the orange button, press play, and boogie on. The show starts now. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Non-Physical from Moon Hooch's forthcoming release, Life on Other Planets, due out Friday, January 11th. While we've had Moon Hooch on the show before, their new album, Life on Other Planets, created an opportunity to once again explore this trio of musicians who are making incredibly impressive music that is certainly undefinable. I mean, there are odes to jazz, R&B, rock, and EDM, but when you put it all in a blender, the sound is more robust than those genres. Then, when you think about the instrumentation of the band, which includes two horns players and a drummer, not to mention a whole bunch of synths and MIDI sequences being fired, well, there is a lot to discuss. So we got in touch with Mike Wilbur, a third of the trio, and half of the writing team to discuss Moon Hooch, where they are at and where they are headed. Our conversation started when I asked Mike why they decided to put out Life on Other Planets now.
Well, it's been a few years since we released a studio record, and we have been playing these songs in our set for the past few years and really developing them. So we wanted to record it and try and capture that live energy on a record.
That is the tough part, right? Because you are such a live act. I mean, from the very early days of busking in New York, you're a live act, and I would imagine that having the energy and the wherewithal to put some of these live tracks down on tape to make them feel live must be an onerous task.
It is. I mean, the way we actually recorded this in our manager's house, which doubles as a music studio. And so we were very comfortable. We hung out there all week and we just did a bunch of takes, and everything on the record is one take, so that helped capture the live essence. I think this album really captures like where we're at as a live band, as well as the first record. All the other records were definitely studio experiments, and we kind of took some leaps with production and vocals and all these other things, and I think this is definitely true to our roots.
You say that, and yet most of the songs on this record track in at, like, you know, 5 or 6 minutes. There's nothing terribly long here. And I know, having seen you live, that things do tend to stretch out and evolve a little bit live. Was the idea to get as many songs down as possible and not stretch things out too far?
Well, originally, it was going to be a 19-track album, and the other 9 tracks or 10 tracks that we omitted from this album were very different, very electronic, a lot of modular synths, and we were considering tying it all in together because our live show, it is a through composed piece. It's almost like an orchestra, like a symphony or something. You know, it's an hour and a half straight through composed. And we were considering doing that with a 19-track album, but it was just so much. It was going to cost a lot more than we had, and take a lot longer than we wanted to wait. You know, we wanted to get some new music out, so we're definitely planning on releasing music in 2020 that is more of a long form kind of a dreamscape, if you will.
Right.
But we didn't really go for that on this one.
It's interesting that you mentioned that it is like a symphony, and I would imagine that is because there are so many things that need to fire during the show and things that need to be planned out, because it really is only the three of you, and yet the sound of Moon Hooch is bigger than the sum of its parts, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how much planning goes into a specific show? Is it the same show every time on a tour? How much planning has to go into this?
Well, it's interesting because it's almost like it's not complete yet. You know, it's always changing and growing, and it is this set thing, that's the same every night, but we change certain parts of it, and there are long improvised sections that have form. They have an entrance and an exit at a very specific time each time. So the timeline remains the same, but what happens within it changes. And in a way, it's like reverse DJing. You know, a DJ takes a record and adds effect. Well, we're making the record as we play, and the effects are the things that are automated and recorded. So, you know, I could be playing on bar 600 and a reverb will open up on my track and send my horn into the reverb. Now, if that's an improvised section, that's going to be kind of random every night. And we do have a lot of sections like that with random automations and like, so it keeps things exciting while also keeping us in a form, in a structure that is sure to deliver each time.
Who has the most pressure when, there are things that have to be fired? Is it you? Is it McGowan? Is it James? Who has the most pressure on them to keep up with what's going on? I would imagine, you know, James has to keep pace, but you guys have to know what's going on too, and that could be tricky, right?
Well, Wenzel and I have always been the ones who produced the set. James hasn't really had much to do with that.
Right.
So he in a way has it the easiest because he's playing, you know, and it's a quick track, and like there are things happening in his ear that tell him what to do, more or less. Now, if things are going wrong, Wenzel and I are the ones that have to deal with it.
Right.
You know, we have to like fix the mics or this or that. But as far as things being triggered concerned, we don't have to think about it at all because it's all pre-planned. You know, it's like we produced an hour and a half album, mm-hmm. but instead of the album being played, we're playing the album live while these effects are happening. So it's not like a guitarist where they have to hit pedals and like, okay, at this point I need to hit this pedal.
Right.
You know? Like the computer just does it all for us. So I guess the answer would be the computer has it the hardest, really. It's a lot to handle. It's like, you know, 16 inputs, all with 12 sends on each input. So,
right.
You know, 12 effects on each input. And they're all being automated on and off throughout the set at different times.
So who has the math degree in this group, or who is the who keeps track of all of that? I mean, it sounds very intricate. Is it a team effort, or is it you and Wenzel? Like, or is it mostly you? Like, it seems tricky.
Yeah, it's tricky, and you know, it's really Wenzel and I. We're the team. We're the production team. You know.
Right.
We've been producing for 12 years now together, and roughly.
Mm-hmm.
even before Moonage, we started like just like hanging out and making beats and stuff on Ableton. So that evolved, and eventually we realized that after so many feedbacks and sound disasters at shows,
mm-hmm.
we're like, hey, man, we're pretty good at producing and mixing, you know. At that point I mixed a few of my own records, and we were mixing some Moonage stuff, so we were really involved with it, you know, and it was all self-taught. But eventually we realized that it would be easier to just do everything ourselves, and we'll get the result we want when we do that, and then we just send a stereo output to the front of house,
right,
and tell them to turn it up.
Turn it up loud.
Turn it up. Yeah. That's all you have to do. Just turn it up.
It's interesting that you mentioned that these are all, in many ways, things that are self-taught. I would imagine that at the New School, it really was about studying jazz and the form the music can take and less about production. Is that accurate?
Totally accurate. Yep. So it was very, it was a very jazz and classical based school, very traditional, you know, similar to what you hear about Juilliard and these kind of places. You know, they're all kind of trying to be the same thing, which is this like jazz factory. And the new school was different in that they had a lot of, in the ensembles, they gave you pretty much total freedom to do whatever you want. That was the contemporary music part. So the full title is The New School for Jazz and Contemporary Music. So the ensembles were pretty free, and you could kind of just explore. But really how I got involved in producing house music and all that was Wenzel was going to the new school, and he was just feeling really bitter about jazz in general and hated jazz and was over it. You know, he was, his whole life, he was like a very strict jazz player. And he just kind of felt, he just started to hate it, you know, and it became too serious. And so he learned how to produce, and he started just making electronic dance music, and got a job on a cruise ship.
Wow.
Playing in a big band and also DJing and playing house music there. That was when he was 20. And then he moved in next door to me. It's like a huge setup almost. He moves in next door to me, and I had not given up the saxophone and was practicing. He knocked on my door, and I recognized him from school. He's like, "What are you working on?" And then we just started, we just became drinking buddies, really. And right. Went to bartending school together. And then he showed me how to, then he showed me how to use Ableton. And I started getting into producing house music. And we started doing it together. And then we were playing on the street together. And it, that's how Moonage formed, really.
It's interesting that it the jazz thing evolved into house music, and it's interesting too that it's a little bit, you know, for those that haven't listened to the record, it's a little bit I would say funkier and full of R&B hooks and stuff. I mean, it really does run the gamut from what, you know, you were probably taught in terms of structure and such in jazz school, but it really does run the gamut from jazz to funk to R&B to EDM. I'm curious about how that evolution takes place. Is it just because you're feeling it? Is it because of influence? Is it because of things that you think will entertain a crowd? How does the evolution go from playing your instrument into something obviously much bigger than you and a saxophone, or Wentz and a saxophone?
It's funny. I mean, it really, to be completely honest, it was money. You know, we're playing on the subway platforms, and it was so obvious that when we played dance music, we made more money. So I wasn't necessarily into it at first. I was just broke.
Right.
And and I was like, well, playing this free jazz shit isn't getting me any money. So, you know, this Wenzel character has got the right idea with the house music. So we just kept doing it. And in doing it, I'm playing the saxophone, which is, you know, the instrument I studied my whole life, and I studied jazz on it. So inevitably, that's going to come through when I'm playing, you know, when we have solo sections or whatever. And after a while, I just started to see how happy it made people. And I was like, wow, this actually makes people happier than all that other shit I was doing. Like, people are entertained by this and will pay to come see it. So it kind of started like that, you know? And as I kept doing it, I started to actually love it. And it became the music that I wanted to be playing. And I quit all my free jazz side projects because I didn't have time anymore, really.
Right.
And I found a way to kind of incorporate that sound and that raw energy with dance music. So it's a pretty funny evolution.
Are there more modern influences now on you guys? Like, what do you listen to when you're not making your own music when you're in the van traveling because you guys are on the road so much. When you're at home sipping on a smoothie, what are you listening to that helps the influence?
Well, recently, honestly, I don't listen to much. When I'm driving, I drive in silence generally.
Right.
And I like to have a clear mind and to have like a quiet environment because there's so much music going on in my head, and also I'm my entire livelihood and like all my hobbies, everything is music based. So, well, not all my hobbies, but I'm making music all the time, and I'm making all kinds of different music. And I don't really look to people, so it sounds weird, but I don't look to people so much for like inspiration anymore. You know, I kind of more look within,
right?
Because there's this infinite pool to pull from in there. And to be quite honest, I'm kind of bored by most of what I hear.
Right.
Like it doesn't actually, a lot of stuff doesn't really move me. So there is stuff that I'll put on, like if I want to get hype, you know, like I listen to a lot of hip hop and rap.
Of course.
Like I like how that makes me feel, you know, hypes me up. If I want to, you know, go back and touch upon like some Coltrane, I'll listen to that. But I spent, you know, the first 20 years of my musical life just nonstop listening to music. And I'm at a point right now where I really enjoy just the sounds around me and just chilling,
right,
just relaxing.
That makes a ton of sense. When you guys go to write this stuff, is it you and Wenzel have hooks and have notes that you want to get down? How collaborative are each of these songs, or do each of you bring individual pieces to one another and say, let's try and do this my way? Or
yeah.
How does that all work out?
Well, it's usually Wenzel and I, 95% of the time, I would say. James wrote a few songs.
Right.
In our catalog, but not very many.
Is that collaborative? Usually, is that collaborative, or is it you bringing something and working it out, or is it him? How does that manifest itself?
We've gone through a bunch of different phases. So in the beginning, Wenzel was definitely the main composer. He would just write things down in a notebook on the subway platform, really simple hooks. That whole first album is just simple hooks that Wenzel wrote on a platform in like 10 minutes.
Wow.
And then solo sections, you know. Right. So he wrote all that stuff. I wrote one song on that album, I think. I guess I wrote the hook to Number 9 and like, you know, Number 8, like a few songs. But it was mostly ones in the beginning. And then I started to actually, like I was saying, started to actually like it and feel inspired by this kind of music and hear this music in my head. So I started to write stuff on the second and third albums, and I'd say it was pretty equal on both of those albums between Wenzel and I. And it depends on the song, you know. Like some songs I'll start in Ableton and I'll show Wenzel like the MIDI file,
you know,
with like a soft synth playing, and then he'll edit that, and we'll just kind of pass the computer back and forth in the van until we have a song that we dig. Or he'll just come with a finished song. Like sometimes his songs are just complete and I have nothing to say about them. And then I just learn whatever part he wants me to play, or vice versa. Or sometimes we will sit in a room and just jam and record, and then, you know, we'll stop if we like something and be like, oh yeah, that was cool, let's do that. But we very rarely write things down on manuscript paper anymore.
Right.
My composition teacher would hate to hear that, but it's just the reality.
So Ableton becomes sort of the sketch pad now at this point, right? It becomes the voice recorder. It becomes the notepad. It becomes the acoustic guitar. I'm just thinking about it from a typical singer-songwriter point of view. Ableton really does do all of that. Are there hooks that you write on sax and then put into Ableton, or are you actually playing sax in Ableton, like, you know, playing MIDI sax in Ableton?
How I really prefer to do it and how I come up with the best hooks is if there is a beat produced with a bass line and everything, mm-hmm. and then I can play my horn over it, that's how I prefer to do things, because I'm just more comfortable in saxophone than any other medium, and right. I feel like I can express myself the best on that. Either that or singing. Sometimes I'll sing a hook and then play it on sax.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, and you know, I always have my computer with me, and I always have an interface with a microphone, so I can really do that anywhere. So that is what I tend to do if I can. I don't really like writing in melodies too much, because then they tend to become more heady when I do it that way.
Right,
and then it's like a huge pain in the ass to learn.
And then you get lost in the headiness of whatever the hell it is that you're trying to write, probably.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's like, what is this even? Like, this isn't catchy. This is just insanity.
Does it all start with a beat? I mean, does everything start with a beat, with a hook? With how does it start? Does it start with you laying down, you know, a click track and then a bass line and then you playing over top? Or do you have a hook in mind? And, I mean, is it organic in that it happens different ways every time? Or is there sort of some sort of form to this madness?
Well, it really depends. Sometimes I'll be walking down the street and like a hook will come to me, so I'll sing it into my voice memos.
Right.
But then I'll go home and make a beat and then, you know, put it all together. I love it when that happens. When the song just comes to me, that's absolutely the best. And then sometimes Wenzel just doesn't like it at all. And I have to just scrap the whole thing. But yeah, it depends. I mean, how we've been doing it recently is we'll each get in a different room, with our wireless mics, and we'll just improvise over a beat.
Right.
And we'll say, okay, let's do E flat minor and, you know, B flat major. And we'll just loop those two chords and try and come up with something. And then we'll have it rolling on Ableton. So then we can stop and cut out the pieces we like. And we actually, those other 10 tracks I was telling you about, that's how those 10 were composed and produced. We just cut up improvisations to make songs. And you get some pretty uncanny results.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, actually. And it's so different from, well, it's not so different, but it's interesting because it is a little bit different from, you know, if you were a singer-songwriter, how you would be composing necessarily. So you have these pieces of music, you've recorded these pieces of music, but really you've been playing them before you even put them down. How did you choose which ones you wanted to record, or was it just a matter of we're recording the whole show?
It was really, you know, we hadn't released these songs ever.
Right.
And some of them, like Bronzed and This Is Water and number four solo, I think we ended up just calling
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that one, for example, that used to be connected to our song Number Four. And there was a solo section but I would play the bass on saxophone, and then it evolved. Once we got a synth, I started playing on synth, but then we were like, oh, we don't like that song anymore. So we cut the song, but left the solo section. And the solo section stayed, and we've been playing it, and it's been evolving for years and years. So we're like, well, let's record that. so we kind of just looked through the set and said, okay, well, what haven't we released? Let's release all that.
Right.
Yeah.
Has there ever been thought to, you mentioned that, you know, you listen to a lot of hip hop, you've played with people like Galactic, or They Might Be Giants, and Lotus, or Tame Impala. Has there ever been thought of adding vocals or rap to any of this stuff, or like any sort of anything but what the three of you are making on stage? Has that ever prompted in your minds? Or
yeah, definitely. I mean, there are songs that I have rapped on and sang on, and we want to do more of it and also collaborate with other singers and rappers and just even the other instrumentalists. It's just doing it is always the hard part. You know, we're on the road and then there's just so much going on, and for some reason it just hasn't happened yet, but it will. It's bound to happen. There's all these people that we want to work with, but everybody's busy, you know, and yeah. Especially the best ones are always the hardest to get a hold of. So,
for sure. And it's, you know, you mentioned touring. It must be easier to tour because it's the three of you and instruments and a couple of laptops. It must make touring that much easier, even though, I mean, it's a grueling task to be on the road, but in terms of setting up and in terms of teardown and everything, it must be much easier than a typical band, right?
You would think so, but the electronic side of things is actually pretty extensive because we have so many wireless components and DIs. And we carry our own rack with us, you know, mm-hmm. So we have 16 preamps and a digital audio converter. There are no amps, you know, but Wenzel plays four different horns. You know, we have a synthesizer. I play a bass sax and a tenor sax on stage. You know, we bring our own drums and all that. So it usually takes, if all three of us plus our tour manager are breaking down, it takes like 40 minutes to break down.
Right.
You know, every night, and about 40 minutes to set up. So it's not terrible. There are definitely people that have it way worse.
Yes.
But it's not as simple as it used to be when you know, it used to be very simple. We'd show up with a drum set and two horns and we're ready to go.
Right. You're heading over to Europe in March. How exciting is that to take this music outside of the continent and to people who are probably really into the music that you're making? I mean, it seems like a very natural fit for Europe to be playing this music.
Definitely. Well, we go to Europe every year, have for about the past 7 years now.
Right.
And we've been building a pretty good fan base over there, and they really love partying. Like, the festivals and like the crowds are just, it's a more excited audience. It really is. It's like, I don't know if it's because they don't get like interesting bands through very often, but
Right. They're
just like freaking out at every show, you know, in France and Germany and Norway. People really appreciate it. And I love playing over there. You know, the hospitality is always really good, and people are really nice. The venues are generally much nicer as well,
right.
and more suited to our kind of music. A lot of the venues over there are clubs that we play.
Yeah.
You know, where DJs play, so it's sound treated. They're not these like old halls,
like the Ardmore or whatever. Like, yeah.
Right, or like even the Fillmore, the legendary Fillmore. It's a shit sounding room, and it's like it's a big boomy box,
right?
You know, and for like DJ type music, it's not, or EDM. It's just too boomy. You know, you need lower ceilings and sound treatment, and you know, so. I love playing over there. It's exciting. The only thing I absolutely do not look forward to is the jet lag.
Right. How long does it take you guys to sort of get over the jet lag? Does it take a couple shows, a couple days, or is it like you're on tour for a week before you get caught up?
Yeah, it's usually a week. It's usually really? A week of feeling like crap.
You know, you put out this music. I think this is what, like your third or fourth, I'm trying to capture it here, third or fourth full length, not including the live stuff. What's next? Where do you see this band headed? The three of you, the trio, where do you see things going in the not too distant future?
Well, we're going to be making, Wenzel and I want to make really accessible dance music this year. Like dance music that is still Moon Hooch, but like you put it on and it's like you want to dance right away.
Like Hook.
Not that not that our current albums aren't necessarily like that, but like we want to be able to have DJs play our stuff in clubs, basically.
Right.
And in order to do that, we kind of have to switch up our sound world a little bit. The way that we produce the record, the way we master it. So we're gonna experiment with that. And it's something we really wanted to do for a while, kind of simplify things a little bit and focus really on like hooks and melody and simple rhythmic progressions, right. While still keeping it interesting and, you know, Moonhooch, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that you can unbottle the Moonhooch sound, right? But I mean, it's a matter of probably figuring out what those hooks are and being able to put them down so that they aren't these elaborate pieces, but they have more of an opportunity to be used in dance music.
Totally.
Well, it's a fascinating project, and I got to tell you, I'm not one of these crazy EDM kids, but I appreciate A, your talents, and B, putting it on and getting a physical reaction when I play it. I mean, it does make you want to dance. It does make you want to get up and have a party, and so it's a lot of fun. And the fact that you guys are doing it with more creativity than actual manpower is incredible. It's incredible. I hope you take care of those Ableton machines, because you know they are your, to a certain degree, the backbone, right?
Yeah, man, it's true. Yeah, we need to service our computer, actually. It's been working hard for many years.
Yeah. Hey, man, thanks for taking the time to do this, and good luck with the tour, and Life on Other Planets is a great record, and thanks for doing this. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate you, brother.
A fascinating discussion about music, where things are headed for Moonhooch, and the impressive technology that's involved, not only in the live experience, but now apparently the studio one as well. If you've never seen Moonhooch live, I would encourage you to do so. For more on Moonhooch, visit moonhooch.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to another track from Life on Other Planets. Here is Candlelight.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.